Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome. Good to have you here on the Mark Steiner Show for our second hour. Reminding you, and it's here on WEAA, and support for WEAA is provided by Bosch, offering Bosch dishwashers at Bray and Scarf. We are going to talk about what's going on in Baltimore City. We know there was an election yesterday. Maybe we'll throw that bit in today. I don't know why we're not doing a show about the election, because we all didn't think about it until yesterday. Basically, it's the truth.
But we're happy about it. Well, at least we're happy about Virginia.
Virginia happened well. New York City happened well.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. How about that guy?
Boston.
Oh, I don't know what happened in Boston.
Before I introduce, I guess I have to say this. They elected Walsh, who is this guy who was running as a Democrat in a very tight Democratic primary.
Yeah.
He's a former head of the building trades unions in
in
Boston.
Building trades guy.
A union guy.
All right. Living wage. Here we come.
And everybody and all the major media and corporate media blasted him, saying that how can we hire a guy like this to run our city? What do they know about running a city? There had been a CEO of a big company that said, oh, we want him. But no, because a union leader was running, they were condemning him because he was in a rally against the governor of Wisconsin. Am I blocking his name?
The one that prohibited unions, in effect.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, the big national.
Begins with a W. I'm just not.
I can't. I don't.
Well, anyway.
So, we all know who you mean.
Is this the kind of man you want as mayor of the city?
Yes.
So the vast majority of people said yes. So he won in there. And even though Christie won in New Jersey, even though Christie won in New Jersey, so did their minimum wage bill that Christie opposed by the same amount that Christie won, that minimum wage bill won.
It just shows you that voters are enlightened.
You know, so it was.
So what's their, do you know what their minimum wage is? Because we got this going on in the state, and
went,
if we don't
think
get
up
it,
to $8.25 with an increase every year, which is bupkis, really.
But we've got, we're going after 10-10 in the General Assembly, and as everybody in the Council knows that, you know, if we can't get that, and that's the way to do it statewide.
Sure, absolutely.
Scott Walker. Thank you.
Walker. So if we can't get that, then now is the hour for living wage in Baltimore.
Sure is.
If you can't do it in a progressive state of Maryland, when can you do it?
Well, the time is right.
Well, let me introduce you all first. Folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages and tweet us at Mark Steiner. We have three of our elected leaders here with us today, and we're going to talk about city issues, but we may range a bit since these things are affected. The entire country is affected
by
this.
Well, the nation has given us a good morning.
It has. Good morning.
It has.
You heard the voices here. Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark.
Good morning.
Representing District 14 in Baltimore. Councilman Carl Stokes represents the 12th District and chairs the Taxation, Finance, and Economic Development Committee, which is in the middle of a fray right now, which is why we said that.
Right. Good morning.
Good to have you here, Carl.
I'm glad to be here.
Good. Got your right. Morgan State University orange tie on, even though you didn't go to Morgan.
I went here. I played pinochle. I dated.
Too much information. Councilman Nick Mosby is with us by phone, representing the 7th District in Baltimore. Nick, good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Nick.
Hi,
hey,
Nick.
There's a lot to talk about here. And I do want to get to the audit question, which we have to talk about, and the curfew bill, and where people are wrestling around about the city. Minimum wage issues. Curfew and more. And panhandlers, obviously. But let me just start with something that really is sticking in my craw. Maybe I don't know where you guys stand on this at all, any of you, but I want to raise it. It's not the issue that's in the forefront of people's minds right now.
Okay.
But it says to me something about, this is my little intro about it. It says to me about the power of wealth to change minds on places like the city council.
Okay.
Maybe I'm saying too much, and you can come back at me with this.
Okay.
But with the styrofoam ban. All right, the styrofoam ban.
Right.
All these people were for it on the council, and all of a sudden people backed away. Even Kraft backed away and said, we got to redo it, even though he was pushing.
No, he hasn't backed away.
Okay, I'll take that back. He has not. Okay. But so Kraft introduced this bill.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he knows it's not ready for a vote.
So this is a bill that would say ban styrofoam for carry out in Baltimore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ban it entirely.
Ban it entirely and replace it with paper.
Sure.
So along comes one of the most wealthy lobby groups in the country, the American Chemical Association, represented by one of the high-powered city lobbying firms made up of former O'Malley team members who run this firm. representing them, saying what it would do to small business. That was the line they were using. But these are the ACA is the same company that was involved with the Bhopal disaster in India. They're the same people who pollute all the rivers and streams in America. And they have the power to say, to turn this around. So that was really, that to me, I was really kind of taken aback by that one, because this is something that seemed very simple. So what if it cost us another 10 cents a Coke? Big deal. I mean, so.
And it's inevitable. It's inevitable. Styrofoam lives forever.
Forever.
And we don't want it living in Baltimore anymore, because what it's doing is polluting our streams, our bay, our inner harbor, and it's hurting our you know, the fish and everything else. And it can be replaced with paper. I mean, I'm not 100 years old. But I grew up in a world where, you know, we ate, we drank, we went out, we lived normally, and there wasn't anything such as styrofoam, and it was a good life. I mean, we lived. We drank Cokes, and we got hamburgers, and there was no styrofoam. Paper that is soluble works.
Can be recycled.
And, yeah, we can recycle it and use it again and again, but styrofoam has very bad recycling potential.
And affects the health of generations to come.
Right, and it'll be here when, you know, all that's left are, you know,
if I can mention two or three quick things. One is, so we should go beyond it, frankly. So we're going to have this conversation, because I don't think it was just the lobbyists, but let me just say that. So Mary Pat and I, as much as possible, don't drink bottled water, because it's a sham. And the plastic styrofoam, this plastic is really screwing up in major ways landfills, the environment, the waterways, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we can go on. Plastic bags, which, you know, most of the trees in Baltimore are blue, not green. So why don't we stop that nonsense? So I don't think, Mark, that it's just the lobbyists that came in.
I don't either.
There is a I think that we'll give ourselves some credit in that there are folk who have been thinking, trying to think through this, the styrofoam ban, and how it does impact on small business and how it does impact the pocket of consumers. And I know there are larger issues depending on where you are. I think we are a very progressive state, a progressive city. You just asked, why did we keep moving in terms of the minimum wage? I think we passed a number of progressive things, both in the city and the state, and you sometimes you can't pass all of it at any single point.
Nick, let me jump in. Go ahead, Nick Mosby.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick.
When we talk about the sustainability of our environment, specifically here in Baltimore, and we bring the subject matter, you know, once again, specific to the implications on Baltimore City, when you look at it, we have a lot of food deserts. And unfortunately, in these food deserts, we have a lot of these carryouts that do nothing but use these type of styrofoam containers. And, you know, with that said, I mean, I know that, you know, the folks were going around with certain statistics of, you know, when you look at it nationally, styrofoam is only X amount of the litter. And, you know, my argument was, I would think that that's categorically incorrect in a place like Baltimore, when we have a lot of carryouts, when we have a lot of these types of establishments that use nothing but styrofoam. So I think when we really talk about environment, we talk about sustainability of Baltimore City, our streams and our harbor, that's critically important that we eliminate something like styrofoam.
If Jim Kraft were here, Councilman Kraft.
We asked him to join us. He couldn't do it today.
Well, but I know what he would say. The stories circulating have hurt the cause, because we are not that far away from winning votes in committee and in the city council on this ban. In other words, I'm not saying anyone misrepresented the case, but the overall effect is that we just went down the tube along with the styrofoam, and we didn't. I'm on the committee. We have a couple of people who were committed that have concerns.
Backtrack.
Right. But it's very close to being what is inevitable, which is to be passed. And the damage of the publicity has simply been that people say it's over. Mm. It's inevitable it will pass. It's just it hit a bump in the road.
So I'm going to go to the phones here, 410-319-8888. We have our three of our city council members here, three of them who join us often and frequently on this program.
Who
open their schedule to do it. Councilman Mary Pat Clark, Councilman Carl Stokes, Councilman Nick Mosby, and you at 410-319-8888. And Gary in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call, and good morning.
Good morning,
City Council people that I've met all three of you.
Good morning.
I've talked to all three of you. I'm one of your firefighters, and I want to just briefly say, first of all, floating trash skimmers, okay? Floating trash skimmers, they have them in Anacostia. It's a win-win situation.
Oh, yeah.
Employment, okay? I, along with Barry Johnston, presented this to a City Council associate years ago. Unfortunately, it went nowhere. But I implore you guys to go to YouTube and just key in Anacostia.
Don't we have these
trash
in the harbor?
We invented these.
We have these in the harbor.
Well, what I'm talking about, I mean, like, you know, various gates at various places that will stop the trash from even getting to the Anacostia.
Oh, yes.
Okay? Put these on streams. And, you know, I'm not going to, but also what I wanted to also say was the gyrus, because, you know, these things, the styrofoam and the other stuff that we pollute rivers, streams with, they end up being in the ocean.
Yeah.
There's actually a gyra in the Pacific Ocean that's twice the size of Texas.
Yes.
And at its most shallow point,
right,
it is 1,500 meters deep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you mean it's like a big bunch of trash all together, right?
Right.
It's an island of trash.
It's an island of trash.
Floating trash, right?
Mm-hmm. Is that what that means?
That's what that means. Mm-hmm. Correct. That's what that means.
He's gone.
So I think these are kinds of things that cities, smaller jurisdictions, can begin to make a change. There's a book coming out by Ben Barber. That we're going to have him on the show about. He's a really interesting thinker from New York who went to same high school I did. But anyway, Ben Barber wrote this book on if mayors ruled the world.
Oh, right.
About how localities are really beginning to be the force that can change, the driving force
been,
of change.
It's always been the case. I mean, I remember when the boycott in South Africa.
Right.
Carl, we were both in the city council. Iris Reeves was leading the charge.
Right,
do you remember?
I do. I remember.
And we were one of the first cities in America that adopted that we would not buy from South Africa. And it started in cities, mm-hmm. at least in this nation, and then became a national effort and everywhere.
Sure.
But you know, all politics is local, right. And the influence comes from where the people live, because the people make the difference.
Absolutely.
And now, locally, I have the same type of support around the Stand Your Ground legislation.
Around what?
We'll be the first major city to do so.
To do what, Nick?
To look at, you know, our spending boards and from a municipality, the dollars that we spend on companies from Florida until they
Oh, right.
Okay.
Why don't you let Councilman Mosby just take a minute to explain what he just meant?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what you meant. It's,
but he knows very well. He knows very.
Yeah, we all know the implications of Stand Your Ground down in Florida and how.
Stand Your Ground.
Yeah, the application is really used in a very subjective manner. So, I called on my colleagues, and you know, hopefully we will have committee hearing and come to a vote pretty soon. So, you know, look at it and look at from a city of Baltimore perspective, you know, any relationships with companies that are based in Florida, if we could, something that's net neutral as it relates to, I'm not saying to pull a contract and we lose money or go somewhere else and it's more expensive, but if we have other opportunities and other options to look at businesses outside of Florida until the Florida state legislature, amends the current Stand Your Ground.
Right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And, I mean, you know, equal rights never did pass.
Right.
We should have done something like that about that.
Sure.
Right. So I agree. And we could, like, cities can do that kind of stuff.
We can do that.
Washington,
we can say, hey, you know, we're not going to buy our products.
Yeah, right. Of course, we're not going to have the hearing here or go into it, but there is another side to things also. There are obviously African-American businesses in Florida that could be impacted and damaged and hurt. So there will be people in Florida who say, why would you do this to us?
Okay, well, we'll have a hearing.
And of course,
yes, we'll have a hearing.
They can come.
They will come.
Stand your ground.
Actually, it's being debated on their state floor now. I think Senator Crump down in Florida, and I've been in touch with Representative Alan Williams down in Florida. They both have bills in there. State legislator, and they just actually testified in front of Congress last week on it.
Doing their homework.
Right. There are more than almost two dozen states that have stand your ground.
Yeah, so if, Baltimore was able to support them, we would be the first major city to do so.
It's worth our consideration
for
sure.
I didn't come down on any side. I'm just saying that there are other arguments.
Let me ask some other questions here about what's facing the city council. I really want to, we've had a lot of calls on this before, 410-319-8888, which has to do with panhandling and the curfew.
Hmm. Oh, both.
Yeah.
Okay.
But let's talk, because they both would, some people would argue they both would lead to increased arrests of people in this community. So let's start with the curfew.
Okay, the curfew, I think we have a curfew that if enforced is strong enough, good enough. I love my colleague, Brandon Scott, but he will be arrested under his curfew law. There's no question. I love him, but he looks like he's 14, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. But I think we have enough of a curfew law. Here's a better idea. Recreation centers that are open until 8 or 9 p.m. that have actual programs that work for young people, whether it's academic or athletic, to have programs that young people can – to have employment for young people. Most young people, frankly, in most of the low-income, even middle-income neighborhoods around the city, kids could use a job. They could use some help to support themselves and, unfortunately, in some cases, their family. So high school kids getting some part-time work. I think there's some proactive measures to do around these type of issues rather than punitive measures that we seem to do. And we already have a curfew law. When people talk about, I see two-year-old babies out at 12 midnight, well, that already is against the law.
Let me just chime in. I think your ideas are excellent, and I'd like to follow up with you, Councilman. But I would like to say this, that we do already have a curfew law, and I know that Councilman Brandon Scott, who is the main sponsor of the amendments to it, was totally struck by children playing outside, for example, in the 4x4 neighborhood, where there had been a shooting this summer, and children are out playing in the streets 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. So basically, his changes to the curfew law that already exists are basically for children less than 14 years old. Instead of a curfew at 10 o'clock at night, he moved it to 9. And he upped the fine for parents and families who don't make their children obey the curfew. So he sort of upped the ante for the responsible parties. He upped the fine for storekeepers who don't help prevent, who don't keep the kids out of their stores during daytime curfews. And he made the daytime curfew start an hour earlier at 8 a.m. with kids on the way to school. So really, the whole idea of the curfew, we live with it every day. What Councilman Scott has done is simply, he's really, for the younger kids and for this daytime curfew, moved the hours earlier and held the families and the shopkeepers to a higher fine.
But that fine's usually
$500.
Yeah, that's, you're talking about working class. Poor working class people in the city.
It's already $300.
So I'm saying, to me is ridiculous. I mean, let me just.
Wait a minute.
Let me finish the question here, because the question I'd like to ask you all is this. So if you took an issue like that, there was an event for Jan Hubolt the other last week that I went to for his retirement. Jan Hubolt. Lovely guy. Building leadership in the city. Anyway, so. One of the people in this latest class is Thibault Mannequin. Thibault Mannequin is
We know him well.
I'm sorry.
Because many listeners may not know who he is.
Right.
The Thibault Manekin and his father are among the more socially conscious developers in the city who really are building things that people can afford to live in,
right,
and doing some great work in this town.
Absolutely.
But one of the things that Thibault said was that when they went on the ride-along, the biggest thing that, with the police, the biggest thing that affected him was seeing the numbers of little kids, 5-year-olds, and then around that age,
right,
on street corners, running up and down the block at 11 o'clock at
right,
night, or 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever that time, all that
right,
time was.
Right.
So the question is there a way to address this issue without it being always this punitive way of attacking it?
Right.
The punitive way of saying we're going to fine the parents, we're going to put the parents, you know, they, you know, take people to court, we're going to, you know, give them fines. Is there another way to address this other than always having to do it with a stick?
Yeah, I think there's a multitude of different things you can do, but I think that doesn't discount what Brandon's trying to do here. And I say that, so when, you know, growing up, you know, I always knew I had to return home once the streetlights came on, and if I did I was going to be publicly embarrassed by my mother screaming my name until I ran up the street or ran up the alley. And I mean, I'm just being bluntly honest. That's what it was. And you know, if you were a kid that, you know, your mother was screaming your name because it's time to go, and that was a very embarrassing moment. So you had to come up with an excuse of why you were going home or whatever. Unfortunately now, because of so many systemic issues that have plagued our communities, you know, our parents just aren't that active in their children's lives. I mean, and there's a number of different ways that we can probably debate and discuss, you know, for hours upon hours. So at the end of the day, I think it is our responsibility to stop allowing this normalization of young folks just hanging out in our streets. And when I say young, I'm not talking about teenagers. I'm talking about, I can look out my window some nights and it's 11 or 12 o'clock at night and see, you know, 5- and 6-year-olds just playing in the dark. So, I think to your point, Mark, man, this cannot be the only cause. And to kind of come from the Stokes point earlier, there has to be other ways of us developing recreational opportunity for our young folks. I think that we talk about, you know, food deserts. We have recreational deserts throughout the city. So we have to develop different ways. But I think this is just one means, and, you know, I'm supportive of it.
And let me add.
We can add this after a break. Let's go to we're going to take a quick break and come right back and tell you, you're the next caller up. We're going to come to your call when we come back, 410-319-8888. And we sit with three of our council representatives, Mayor Pat Clark, Carl Stokes, and Nick Mosby. 410-319-8888. Tell you're the next caller up. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. You're listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA. And our guests are Councilwoman Mayor Pat Clark, Councilman Carl Stokes, and Councilman Nick Mosby. And you at 410-319-8888. On our way back to our conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering financial services for all the people. MeQ Baltimore's credit union can be found at www.mecu.com. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. MeQ Baltimore's credit union can also be found on the Steiner Show. Their banner is right there. Can we go right to the phones here? Get our listeners back in at 410-319-8888. Then we want to talk about the audit hearing tonight coming up in Councilman Stokes' committee. 410-319-8888. Telly, you're on the air.
Oh, hello?
Hi, Telly. You're on the air.
Hey, Kelly.
Thank you. My name is Kelly Cross.
Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
Oh, hi, Kelly.
Hi, 23rd and Maryland Avenue.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you. And a member of the Old Godger Community Association. I just wanted to briefly talk about the 25th Street Station development. We really appreciate all the council members' activity and interest in this development, especially Councilman Stokes' engagement with our community. I just wanted to say that I think it's really time that we start to consider and really evaluate whether this development should be considered a major amendment to the plan unit development that was presented to the City Council in 2010. I think neighborhoods around that development have changed dramatically over the last several years. And the development itself has changed dramatically, such that we've now got a really dynamic, vibrant neighborhood, or neighborhoods around the proposed development site, but we're being given essentially a suburban strip mall and being told that that's sort of the best that we can get. You know, I think that it's time to sort of take this back to ground zero, bring this back to sort of the new neighborhoods that have evolved around that site. And to ask Walmart, ask the developer, this developer, a future developer, anyone else who wants to develop that site, to do something better and insist on good development for Baltimore City and for our neighborhoods.
Comments?
Yeah, it is. He's talking about Walmart, 25th Street Station, right, that was voted on and passed almost unanimously by the city council some 3 years ago, and then got hung up in court when a neighbor sued the development. The development has since moved forward. 25th Street, Lowe's pulled out of the project. Walmart, the building was a two-story building, Walmart above Lowe's. Lowe's has pulled out. It's now a one-story building. And so we're having a healthy debate in the community of whether or not this new design should go forward or not. And so the major piece here is whether or not the Planning Commission considers this a major amendment to the already passed PUD, in which case it would then come back to the City Council to break it all open, which obviously the developer doesn't want to see. Many in the community want to see, although many in the community do not want
so
that
what,
to
what's
happen.
At the heart of it?
The heart of it is, well, the argument Kelly's talking about is the argument that the councilman has just described, in which if it comes back to the City Council as a – if it's a – Planning Commission has the legal right to decide whether an amendment to a PUD, is minor or major. If it's major, it's got to come back to the City Council to have an ordinance to fix it. If it's minor, the Planning Commission handles it and makes decisions and on with the show. So, you know, there's a longer process and a legal process if it's major and it comes to the council. That's the argument. And I'm across the street from Councilman right. Stokes's district, the Remington neighborhood, the Old Goucher, the Charles Village. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's in the lead, but I'm
sure.
right there with him right. around. And I think we've argued that it's major.
Yes.
In that the density and bulk has changed of the site.
True.
And that's part of one of the criteria. But we don't have the decision-making power, and the Planning Commission has decided that it's minor what's happened and changed, and that they're going to handle it there. So
if I just, Councilwoman, the planning staff has decided, not the commission.
Well, that's correct.
Go ahead. The commission will make a decision on the 21st of November.
Yes, uh-huh. And that's why you're the leader and I'm the father on this one.
let me ask another question before, because I want to get to James, our next caller up. Kelly, I'm glad you called that in, and we'll keep us abreast. And James, we're going to come to your call next, but I do want to ask Councilman Stokes something first and have the other two councilmen, starting with Nick Mosby, comment.
Sure.
Talk about the hearing tonight, and we saw the article this morning saying the mayor saying that
yes, it seems
that we don't need these audits at the moment. That she doesn't oppose them, but she says give us a chance to make this work.
I laugh because two out of every three times I come here, we're talking about audits in City Baltimore, and so 3.5 years ago when I first came back to the City Council, I asked, along with Murray Pat, Jim Kraft, others, that we audit Department of Recreation and Parks
right.
because we were going to close all of these rec centers. And so 3.5 years later, Mark, we still do not have an audit of rec and parks. Although the mayor and finance and everyone else said, we welcome an audit. But they have never done it because finance stonewalls. Rec and Parks doesn't have records that are.
Which we learned that they have very few records. They can't right. find anything.
They can't find anything. And so now finance is saying, and the mayor called a press conference yesterday to say, we're not against audits, Councilman Stokes. We just don't want any. Wait a minute. Not yet. Not yet. We want to show you what we can do. Well, see, the reason I'm calling for the audits is because I've seen what they can do. And so those. The media, so does my colleagues, everyone sees what we've done. And we've made mistakes, and it's not such a horrible thing to make a mistake, right. but to refuse to acknowledge that we've made mistakes and to try to figure out independently how to correct them. They want a self-audit. You don't do self-audits. You do an independent, third-party audit, and that's what we're requesting.
And you're really focused right now on the
I promise, Nick. Let's not forget other councilmen who can't see because he's on the phone.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick.
Let's go to Nick and then go to Mary Pat. Nick,
Councilman Mosby.
Yeah, so I think we're going to, Mark and team, we're going to continue to go down this path. of, you know, folks looking from different perspectives as it relates to the audit situation in Baltimore. Last year, I proposed a bill that's still hung up in committee to develop an audit commission that would basically be subject matter experts from the field, you know, CPAs, business leaders, folks who are used to looking at performance and financial audits to help and make recommendations as it relates to the current audit situation in the city of Baltimore. Other major cities such as Boston have commissions formed. And I think these individuals, I know folks were concerned about who was appointing the committee, and at the end of the day, these folks have a fiduciary responsibility to their craft, to their industry, to provide, you know, the best steps that Baltimore should take forward. You know, I think that we have to do audits. Another bill I have that's out there that's pending is for us to have a repository that kind of reflects our past audits as well as an audit schedule. So the folks in the city should know, you know, what agencies are coming up for audit next, and they should know the results and byproducts of previous audits. So we're going to continue to have this debate until we put, you know, formalized plans in place to ensure that folks will understand and know, you know, the difference between financial and performance audits, and understand and know the triggers and red flags in which to revoke those audits should be done. So I'm for audits. I think we need to do audits. I would just would love to see an audit schedule so we'll know what's coming down the pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Mary Pat, there's a lot of people calling
well,
in.
Well, no, I think that Councilman Mosby has really summed it up very well, because, and just let me add that the voters of this city who pay the bills have overwhelmingly approved the audit, the stepped-up audit schedule and financing and support, because their money is what's at, our money as taxpayers is what is at issue.
Right.
So very quickly, because there are like many callers calling in, we get some of them, as many as we can. So what about the hearing tonight? What are you
hearing
do
tonight is at 5 o'clock in City Council Chambers. If you're a city resident and happen to have a certain cable company servicing your TV, you can watch it on Channel 25. Otherwise, it's live in City Hall at 5 o'clock. We will do two hearings. Actually, one is the demand, an immediate audit of the finance department, which the controller is doing. And legally, our controller is in charge of that. And secondly, there will be a hearing to talk about whether or not we should go to a third party to actually do the calculation and billing of taxes in Baltimore City. Because frankly, our finance department and others do not do a very good job of calculating or collecting taxes. There's a lot of money left on the table in the city.
Well, I have a question about that, but let me go back to the phones first.
Then okay,
I'll come back to a question about that. 410-319-8888. James in Baltimore, you're on the air.
How you guys doing?
Very well.
Hey.
Welcome.
Hi.
This is more so towards, I guess, Mighty Pat Clark. I live down in Washington Village, Pigtown, down in Moore Park area. And my question is about the CSX and the mold site that they're building, the $90 million facility that will bring real jobs.
Yes, sir.
And not the jobs that they have from 7-Eleven and every corner store that they're building along Washington Boulevard.
Right.
I mean, what's the problem? I mean, it seems like everybody's against it, but when I went to the meeting up there, I stood up for it because we need real jobs. Not working at World Farms, 7-Eleven, all the little convenience stores. That really are just a nuisance.
I think it's a really important question, James.
Well, it is an important question, and I think that you're correct that the jobs are important, the relocation is important to the port, but that CSX has not done its job of working with the Mora Park community to relocate itself into the heart of that community, and that what Councilman Reisinger is saying as their direct representative is that, whoa, everybody, this is not going to be some slam dunk into the community because of the need for CSX or the jobs that it brings. And I hope we get some of those jobs. They left Baltimore to go to Jacksonville, by the way. But that the way that the community is being asked to just slam dunk accept is not acceptable to the councilman. And so I'm very supportive of his position. I know that community well. And you can't just go in there and push and shove, no matter how important you are. There's going to be some pushback, and everybody needs to sit and put their heads together, equally.
So what?
Yeah, no matter how tough the communication is, that communication still needs to take place. But, you know, outside of the jobs, which are critically important to working class families in the city of Baltimore, when you look at it and you look at what that will do for the city, like, you know, Mary Pat said, and our port, you know, it's critically important, not just for the city of Baltimore, but also for CSX. So, but that tough conversation needs to take place. You know, the residents of that community and the councilmen definitely need to have a major stakeholder seat at that table. And I think that that's what Councilman Ressinger is currently doing.
So before we go back to the phones, though, do you, any of you have in your minds a resolution to this?
I think the resolution is exactly what Councilman Mosby just said and what Councilman Ressinger has said from the beginning. Sit down in a, and let's discuss the details of this move. With the community. Don't come in and tell them. Come in and sit around the table and discuss.
What I mean is, very quickly, I want to get this other phone call in the 5 or 10 minutes we have left and come back to Artis before we go.
Okay.
But is there a solution to having this site here on the growing port where people say we'll give them jobs, but we'll also disrupt the entire community if you have hundreds of trucks barreling through the community every day?
Well,
so what is the resolution?
Right.
Do you have any sense of what the resolution is?
First of all, you got to have a discussion to understand the limits of what the community can tolerate and the limits of what they're willing to do the right thing, and that has not occurred. There's been a, here we are, here's what's happening, see you later, kind of conversation, and it just that's not going to work. And right. So the councilman basically dug in to say, let's sit, let's
gotcha.
Be equals.
Okay, I understand.
This is a community
when you talk about a complex issue like this, there's all sorts of non-negotiables or type of situations, operational procedures that the community may be willing to kind of hear. But like what Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark just said, you know, at the end of the day, they just came in and said, okay, well, this is the site, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to put it up, without really having much community input into that.
Right. So let me give it, I guess, consideration, impact consideration. How do they improve the community by this site?
How about cutting some grass along some tracks one of these days?
Oh, wow.
I mean, would that be good?
Oh, wow.
I mean, we all have CSX tracks going through the community. They had a wonderful person, Sharon Du Bois, who finally, after all these years, started working with communities and did a wonderful job. And now she's gone, and there's no one left to talk with.
Cut the trash.
If I could jump in.
We don't have much time. I do want to get back
to
audits.
This is so critical, not to the city, but also to CSX. So CSX is not going to walk away and just fold their hands and say, no, we're not going to do it. It's going to happen. It just needs to happen the right way with community involvement.
And that's a really important point, Nick, a really important point. So what I want to ask the three of you, and Carl very quickly before we get Damien on the air, another caller waiting, is what power does the city council really have to force the issue when it comes to audits, to audit the city government? I mean, what I mean, because this has been going on a long time.
It has.
Back and forth.
So by charter, we don't have a lot. By charter. Because it belongs in the comptroller's hands to do this. She can call for an audit any time she cares to.
But she hasn't.
But she has not. And we don't have regular audits. Most of the agencies have not been audited for 30 years. The council tried, not to put us on spot, but we tried to do a comprehensive, strong audit bill.
I remember that.
That was voted down, frankly, by the council, the majority of the council.
Well,
under direction. You did, Mary Pat. I said not to put anybody on the spot. Didn't I say that?
No, but I can't wait for the opportunity to talk, so make sure you put me on the spot.
Nick not only voted against it, but he told me he was for it one day and turned against the other.
Oh, my gosh,
so, and he said put him on the spot. And you know why? Because the mayor did not want it. The votes that fell against it were because the administration did not want it. And so here we are 3.5 years later, still not auditing rec, parks, health, housing, finance. This is ridiculous. It doesn't happen. It shouldn't happen anywhere that the citizens are not able to see their money.
We have 4 minutes left here.
Nick,
1 second. I'm just saying we have 4 minutes left.
If I could jump in real quick. And by the way, we're helping your ratings. They don't need help, Mark, but we're going to help them today. You know, the councilman was correct. We need to do audits. We haven't done audits in a long time. But I think
I think it's categorically incorrect to in a base like Baltimore City, where there is already a huge amount of apathy towards the way the government runs and the way things are set, to provide expectations that are impossible to meet. And the councilman who spoke, Councilman Carl Stokes, had a plan that he wanted to audit every city agency, I believe, biannually. So every 2 years, we would audit every agency and every commission, all 63 or 70 of them, and provide quality audits. Now, from a corporate background, being, you know, going through audits and having audits done on my departments and organizations, I know that that's feasibly impossible.
Why?
And at the end of the day,
although that wasn't the bill before us, frankly.
When you talk about establishment of performance audits and financial audits, first of all, financial audits should be done on an annual basis for every single thing. The way we find where the inefficiencies are and where the corruptness and where things are a problem that have been problems for decades are in the city of Baltimore is by us doing performance audits.
No,
and it's tackling
no,
those agencies
audits.
Where, hold on, let me talk. I'll let you talk.
I have to be the referee here. You've got like 45 seconds so we can let Carl respond before we have to go.
I'm
go ahead,
sorry.
Nick.
I won't respond.
So it's critically important that you have measures in place that show the red flags where you go after and you do performance audits. You will be wasting your time to just say every biannual year just for the purpose of saying that you want to do that, of doing these audits when, once again, it's feasibly and from a resource perspective, impossible. You should go after the agencies, the largest agencies, which was on the table and which was passed, and go in. And when you do an audit, Mark, an audit isn't based off an agency. An audit is based off of a task or a function or independent system inside of that particular agency. That's where a performance audit comes in, and that's where you find the inefficiency.
Okay. Bring the experts on, Mark. Leave me out of it. Bring the experts on and have the experts talk to you about the best business practices.
Well, I mean,
this is like basic. We're spending taxpayer money. People work hard for it. And if we're not auditing it and making sure it's being properly spent, then shame on us. And this is not a debatable issue. It's just basic to city government and using people's money. And if we're not doing it, then shame on us because it keeps popping up as a problem.
I think, Mark, we all agree on that. We need to do audits, but I think that it's critically important that we level set expectations and we don't tell folks that we're going to be able to do performance audits on every single agency and every single commission in the city every 2 years.
Okay, but
No city does it.
Okay, but I don't know. That's actually probably not true because we did these intense shows on audits here. Mm-hmm. We had people, and you were on these shows, Nick, as well, and so were you, Carl.
Sure.
And with leading people who knew about audits who were pushing the thing. I think there are cities who do audits much more frequently than Baltimore does.
They do it every few years. Do them more infrequently.
And that we do need some kind of audit procedure in Baltimore City. The question is, how do we get there, and why is it being stymied?
But it's money,
and when you have things like Bureau of Recreational Parks that has been
keep using the term audit in a very ambiguous way.
No, not ambiguous. Financial audits. I'm very clear. Don't ask me. Ask any expert, any IRS agent. Ask the government how this should work. Ask the GBC how this should work.
If we're talking about financial audits, yes, every city agency. Definitely.
Well, but we don't do it, Nick.
We don't do it. Where you find the critical...
Well, that's 101.
Correct. And I totally agree. That's why I think that at the end of the day, we're agreeing on more than we're not. But at the end of the day, where you find the critical inefficiencies, where you find the problem that you've had in these structures for decades, is through performance audits. It's, you know,
okay.
How are we receiving the money?
Okay, we agree.
What are we using?
But we're not doing any audits is the problem. Performance
right.
audits.
That's the issue.
Take anything.
Right.
Give me anything.
Right.
Let's just tell me how we're spending the money before I have to read it in the Sun papers on the in the morning.
Right. What a day to wake up to.
I do want to thank. It's always great to have you all on. I think I appreciate you all, Councilman Nick Mosby, District 7, Councilman Carl Stokes, District 12, who tonight at 5:00 is having a hearing at the Taxation, Finance, Economic Development Committee on the issue we've just been talking about on audits.
Right.
People can come.
Yes, they can come.
They should.
They better come. They should come to find out where our money is not.
It's a public hearing. People can testify.
5:00. Yeah, 4:30. They can get in at 4:30.
And bring picture ID to get into City Hall.
Thanks. Right.
And Councilman Mary Pat Clark, District 14.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you all here.
I'm glad to be here. We didn't get into panhandling. Maybe another time.
Maybe that's a blessing. We'll have to come back.
I mean, one of the things in panhandling I'm going to find out is when we have, I'm going to get the folks who said this on, I'd love to get them on to talk about how they came up with $11.1 million loss in business from panhandling. Mm. I still haven't seen the where that study comes from, what it says.
We need an audit of that study. A financial audit.
Because if you drive into New York City, the first thing you see are people asking for money and can I wash your windows and give me $5. So anyway, they don't seem to be
hurting. Give me 10 and I won't wash your windows.
But thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Mark, right. Always. Lovely debate, discussion.
Tchaikovsky taking us a break. It's the anniversary of his passing in 1893. We'll be right back with the Baltimore City Paper and Maynard Woods to tell us what's in this week's issue. Stay with us.